Meow. Mr. Derek J, here to inoculate you from indoctrination. Broadcasting live and worldwide from LRN.FM studios in Keene, New Hampshire, the Liberty Media capital of the world. I am here. Help me warm your synapses this early morning, Davi Barker and Nick Hazelton. So
is New Hampshire New Hampshire's wrestling name?
Yes. We lay the smackdown on the freedoms. So, yes, we are here. Davi Barker, the shiny badger, are you safe? Have you been contacted by the government?
I'm safe, and I have not been contacted by the government.
Very good, sir. And Nick Hazelton, the hazy yak, broadcasting from Western Oregon. Are you safe? Have you been contacted by the government?
I am safe, and I have not been contacted by the government.
Good! Me too. Michael Dean can't be with us tonight. As you fellas know, he is fighting zombies in the back of his throat. Kill those zombies, Michael! And
man, throat zombies, that's rough.
It happens all the time. There are millions of cases across the U.S. right now. Well,
is there
yeah.
a vaccine or something?
No.
Is there a...
There's anti-zombie bacteria pills. I don't know. He'll be fine. So we're yakking in his place with the anarcho-yakitalist. You have a website about that, don't you, Nick? You have a podcast you do about yaks and freedom.
I do. I have the anarcho-yakitalism podcast, and you can find that at an-yak.com. That's an-yak.com.
Worms.
If you take out the dash, you can get to a Russian model site, which is always fun.
That's not the same thing. That's not what you want.
No, I'd rather if you go to my website, but you can also check her out, too.
Okie dokie. And Davi Barker has DaviBarker.com. I just changed my website over to TheDerekJ.com to make it easy and fit in line with all you .com people. So
there you go.
Yeah, that's our thing. And I want to
talk. One and only.
I want to talk about piglets, Nicholas. You have some piglet news.
I do. I had a litter of pigs this last weekend, and they're
Yay!
Absolutely adorable.
Mazel tov.
Uh-huh.
So what happened?
Well, I'm not the best pig farmer. I'm young and I'm inexperienced, and I actually had two litters of pigs. One.
What
survived,
does your inexperience have to do with that? Do you not know how piglets are made?
Know. Well, I know how they're made. I've seen it happen, and I watched part of the birth, too.
Wow, that's
But I just didn't know how well... Yeah, I just didn't know how well they needed to be taken care of. These pigs are supposed to be homesteader piglets. They're what is it called? A heritage breed pig.
Yeah.
And they usually do fine on their own, but it's always best if you can get them into a pen when they're about to have a litter. That way, they're just... nice and comfortable, and I did not do that. I was not expecting a litter for a little while longer than they came, so I did not move my pigs into a pen, and they were birthed out into the pasture near the barn.
So what's the big deal? Haven't pigs been birthed out in the pasture for millennia?
Well, yeah, they have, and usually they do fine. I had an exceptionally large litter from my first sow. I had 9 piglets.
So what's with your sensitive piglets that they're so special usually, that they need a special setting to be birthed in?
Well, so the pigs build nests for their young. And
like
then
birds?
They occasionally get out. Yeah. With a lot of hay and a lot of straw.
Where do they just collect stuff from all around? Like it's an instinct, like beavers building dams and stuff?
Yeah, I don't know if they really need a spot to have a nest, but they usually find some sort of place where there's a lot of dry straw, and they just huddle up there. I don't know what they'd do if they didn't have straw, but I'm assuming their instincts would take over. And
how big are these pigs?
Work.
How big are mommy and daddy pig?
Oh, the dad pig, he's probably a little less than 300 pounds, and he's about the size of a Labrador.
And these are not pets,
but
you're raising them for bacon.
Yes.
Yummy.
Yeah.
Okay, so you just multiplied your bacon supply. Well done, sir. And you're saying you did it wrong? You didn't give them a proper nest or something?
Yeah, I should have moved them into a pen and kept them nice and warm and the closer to me where I could monitor them better and so that their mother would have a more comfortable spot. But unfortunately, she didn't have that well of a defined nest so the pigs could get out. So they got three of them got out, and I believe they froze.
Oh!
And she dispatched of them.
Oh!
She, yeah.
What's dispatched of them mean? Is that just polite radio talk for something else?
Yeah, she ate them.
Oh, no.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is what mother sows are supposed to do when their young die. That way they don't have the body there to make it smell so predators would come.
Wow. But you could
That's
just...
actually surprisingly common in the animal kingdom. I mean, if you think about most species are living day to day in a survival scenario, it's largely about not wasting protein, too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a pretty scary sight. Do you have pictures?
I have pictures of the living piglets. I don't have pictures of her eating them.
Well, no, I mean about like the birth and everything.
Oh, no.
You didn't like grab a video camera or something?
No, I didn't really think people enjoy that, and I didn't really. So
I guess the videos are out there. I think it's kind of special, though. And it's pretty cool, because you're pretty young for a piglet farmer. Most people aren't doing that your age. That's cool. How old are you? Have you aged since we last talked? All right, great. Getting older, good. But I know I wasn't doing that at 16. What drives you to even do that? I mean, you're like, I want lots of bacon, so I'll make it myself. It's why not go to the store?
Well, I don't know. I don't think I could really live with myself if I didn't. I have to do something. I'm just that kind of person.
You couldn't live with yourself?
Yeah, if I didn't do things. If I just played video games or whatever, I couldn't do it.
Okay.
Hey, Nick, do you name the animals that you intend to eat?
No.
No. Okay.
I always wondered about that. I'm afraid I'll get attached, but I just don't have a reason to name them.
I have a friend who raised pigs.
When I was in college...
Oh, sorry. Go on, Debbie.
When I was in college, I had a friend who... He had a pet goat that he had for many, many years, and it had a name and everything. And then when the goat was old, or at least ripe, I guess, when it was the right age for slaughter, he brought home, or brought back to our college dorm, a lot of the meat, and we made like a spaghetti out of it. And it was interesting to me that, like, from his perspective, to eat the meat of this pet that was named was a joyous celebration of that animal's life. And I just thought that was such a different way of looking at it than I'd ever conceived of before.
That is
cool.
But
obviously not every farmer does that. But it was meaningful to him that this spaghetti was made with his pet animal.
Yeah, I dig that. It is a celebration of life in a way. You know, if he helped raise him and he gets to see him through to death, you would hope that you would... I don't know, pass the life energy force on to something good. Like, I'm not a religious person, but I know before, like, I was raised to be, and before every meal we would pray, and we would thank God for the food and hope that, and we would ask that the food become like something good, like that we produce something good with the energy that we get from it, was the general type of prayer. And I think that's pretty common for all religions, but this is like, it doesn't have to be religious. It seems like, you know, you didn't reference any religion of this particular farmer. Maybe he was, but I don't know. It's a celebration of life, and there's no denying that we get more life force from consuming meat. And that's pretty cool that he had this connection to it because he raised it. I know a farmer who raises pigs, Nick, and he did name his pigs.
Are these the Senators?
The Senators, yeah. Mark Edge of Free Talk Live named his pigs after living senators. I think it made him be able to have a lovable relationship with them, be able to keep track of them, but also not too attached. You know, these aren't despicable people, so it's not so bad. When
that's
you think
interesting.
About their,
it's choosing
their
a detachable name.
Yeah. Hey, speaking
my
of animals.
Named after Lupe Fiasco.
You have a pet?
Yeah, my pet cat, Fiasco, he's named after Lupe Fiasco, the rapper.
Why is that? Are you just a big rap fan?
No, the tradition fan? My wife is a Lupe fan, but no, the tradition in my family is to name pets after current events. And so, like, when I was a kid, my cat's name was NAFTA, and then after NAFTA, we had Jesse, which was when Jesse Ventura was running for governor or somewhere.
Wow, that's and cool. So, the cat is like a timeline.
Fiasco. Yeah, exactly. So this Fiasco we got during Occupy Oakland, and it was shortly after Lupe Fiasco donated 100 tents to the Oakland encampment after the police stole everyone's tents. And aww. So he was named for that event.
Worms. That's pretty cool. I don't have any pets. I don't like pets. I don't want any animals around. I don't know. I'm like the totally human. You're from a city, right, Davi? You're in San Francisco. People don't really need to have pets around there. Although I feel like a lot of people have dogs in San Francisco. Is that true?
I see a lot of dogs. I don't actually live in San Francisco proper. I live in a suburb called Sunnyvale. And pets are pretty common all over California, though, especially since you can have indoor cats, like a lot of places, or indoor dogs.
It always seems like a stupid addition to life to me that I would have to ask or invite another mouth to feed. Like, if it's not something that I'm killing to make more bacon, that you know at least there's some benefit at the end of this animal's the person who gets a dog or a bird or something. It's like, what do you get except a lifetime of feeding
Fiasco's
some animal?
He's an addition. Fiasco contributes. He's fun contributes. And he's plays and he's cute and
worms.
And sometimes he even talks on the air.
Meow.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges. Yeah!
This is Davi Barker from ShinyBadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at ShinyBadges.com, write WORMS in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
Michael Dean's not here, so when, what is it, the cat is away, the mice will play, the hamsters will play.
It's true. The worms will play.
Yeah. So, Davi, you saw a movie recently called Birdman, and you enjoyed it. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so this came about on account of Birdman winning, I think, Best Director or something else in the Oscars recently, and I had no interest in the film on account of the description. Like, the synopsis of the plot just didn't sound interesting at all. It kind of sounded like self-congratulatory sort of Hollywood talk. But when I saw the cast on stage at the Oscars, I was like, I have to see this film. It's Michael Keaton is the main sort of protagonist, and he's one of my favorite actors. Emma Stone plays his daughter, and she's becoming one of my favorite actors.
What's she in?
Let's see. She was, I think, in Evil Dead, the remake, and Suburbia, and some other
Suburbia.
Things. She's sort of an up and coming.
Oh, she was in Spider-Man.
Up and coming kind of actress, I guess. Spider-Man. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I wonder if there's references to that in this film.
Is she sort of a the girl who plays Mary Jane in Spider-Man?
Yeah, she is. In one of the reboots of it.
All right.
Also, Edward Norton is in it. He's the guy from Fight Club and The Incredible Hulk.
Yeah.
And then there was another one. This guy, I don't remember him being on stage, but he's one of my all-time favorite actors. And he's not very well-known, and he's just sort of one of these quirky actors that just gets really cool parts. And his name is Damien... I'm going to forget his last name. Damien Young.
Okay.
And he doesn't have a major role in this film. He's sort of like a movie critic or something, but he's a really funny guy.
Hot dog stand vendor.
Yeah, something like that. And then Zach Galifianakis, who's another comedian. The interesting thing about this, I mean, there's lots of interesting things about this movie. This is the thing. Like, it's self-referential. I love art that's self-referential. But none of these actors are playing the type of character you might normally expect them to play, if that makes sense. And in that sense, they're proving their clout as an actor. You know what I mean?
That's cool.
Like, Zach Galifianakis is famous for these sort of, like, over-the-top comedy stuff, but he's the straight man in this troupe. Like, he's the manager who's trying to keep everybody in line. And Michael Keaton, who is often a sort of comedian type, he's almost like he's got a mental disorder in this film. This is sort of, I feel like the movie's about Michael Keaton, right? So Birdman is a reference to Batman. Michael Keaton is playing a guy named Reagan or something, who used to play Birdman, and he was famous for playing Birdman, and then he, like, turned down the role in the fourth Birdman movie because he didn't want to get typecast, and then he had no career after that. And now he's trying to make his way as a screenwriter or scriptwriter for Broadway. And it's just about him kind of risking everything to put together a play. But it sort of feels like he's talking about Michael Keaton, right? Because Michael Keaton was in he was the first Batman, but now sort of Christian Bale is the famous Batman, and now Christian Bale's done with Batman, like,
and way sexier.
So this is sort of than Michael Keaton. Yeah, for me, Michael Keaton is Christian Bale is sexier than Michael Keaton, but to me, Michael Keaton is he's the right mix of comedy and action.
Yeah, and he's like old enough too. Like, Batman should be a little older. Michael Keaton's sort of the right age. He sort of grew into Batman. About Birdman versus Batman, my first thought hearing about this, since it is self-referential and they're sort of just really talking about Michael Keaton and his life, do you think it would be a better movie if they were able to use the Batman iconology or whatever, like, from DC, if they didn't have to, say, like, spend millions of dollars paying off IP lawyers and stuff? Could this be a better movie if they just talked exactly about what they're actually talking about, which is Batman, instead of inventing this new character? Or do you think it does better things?
No, I don't
things?
Think so. I actually think it's better that it's not actually Batman, because in the story of the movie, the character is also writing a play, which is a catharsis of his failed life. Right, and so you have these three levels. You have the character in the play in the movie, you have the character in the movie, and then you have Michael Keaton, the person. And it works on so many levels. It's like a satire of Hollywood, a satire of superhero movies. There's a scene where Regan is sort of having an emotional crisis, and then suddenly all the explosions in Hollywood special effects, like, bombard him on the streets of New York, but it's all in his mind. Right? Because it is a drama, but they put the action in there and make fun of putting the action in there.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Hey, there's some Squiskar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
For some reason in this country, and in most of the Western world, it's okay to just dodge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about FiendPhone.
FiendPhone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to FiendPhone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's FiendPhone.com, FiendPhone.com, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Phone.com.
FiendPhone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Okay, so we're talking about movies. We're deconstructing Hollywood. Davi, you've got it all. We were just talking about constraints and the intellectual property of Batman and DC Comics not really... I mean, it's too expensive, so it becomes one of those constraints that a movie would have to place on itself, whether it wanted to or not. And this Birdman movie that you're talking about sort of is...
So they're clearly talking about Batman, yeah. But they're also sort of talking about Birdman. And they're referencing something without saying it. And I don't know if that's intentionally part of the art, because the Birdman figure, there is a Birdman figure full with like wings and costumes and stuff. And he is a very comical-looking figure. But it may have been that the writers wanted to use Batman and couldn't because of contracts and intellectual property and studio agreements and whatever.
Yeah, but I don't care. I think it makes it better. As you pointed out, you know, it becomes its own thing. It's its own movie. It's more timeless this way. And yeah. There's more creativity within it. Like, because it's its own world, people aren't linking things back to reality or making it too real. You know, it can live in its own universe.
Yeah, and it also doesn't come off as a confession by Michael Keaton, right? Like, it's entirely right. Possible this is not autobiographical, right? Like, it probably isn't, but it sort of has that flavor to it, if that makes sense. So we don't have to judge Michael Keaton for the actions of the character. It is a work of fiction.
Yeah.
And when it isn't constructive, though, is when things happen, like, X-Men is owned by one studio and Spider-Man is owned by another studio. And so even though they're both Marvel and they cross over in the comic books, they can't cross over in the movies because of intellectual property problems.
Wait,
that happens
what?
A lot. Yeah. So Spider-Man is owned, I think, by Sony. And I don't remember who owns X-Men. It's not really material, but... the same thing with Batman and Superman. Like,
they cross over in the comics all the time. Are you telling me in the movies they're like not allowed because of lawyers and stuff?
Yeah, right. So Marvel licensed the characters to different studios, and they were not able to do crossovers when they should have been able to.
Man,
so this is
lawyers.
Why, like, X-Men. Yeah, so X-Men rushed the Phoenix plotline, right? The Phoenix plotline appears in the third X-Men movie, but in reality, the Phoenix plotline should have gone into the Galactic Wars and Thanos and the Infinite Gauntlet and all this stuff that requires Spider-Man and the X-Men and the Avengers, and it's a whole Marvel Universe war.
Right.
But they couldn't do it in the movies. Now they've built the franchise of the Avengers. They've built the franchise of Spider-Man. And so the lawyers are desperate to say, let us do this crossover. And the lawyers are getting in the way. So there are constraints that are detrimental to the creative process. And that's one example. The Superman-Batman crossover that's happening, I don't know when it's supposed to come out, but they've announced that they're going to do it. It was a lawyer fight, too. Batman and Superman were both from DC, but DC licensed the characters to different studios, and so the crossover was difficult.
I wonder why they would do that. I mean, I guess they get different offers on both. Like, maybe one studio wants Batman a lot more, so they're willing to pay more than the other studios, and so that's why DC would license them to different people. It seems weird.
Well, part of it is that the comic books all start as independent universes, right? Like Spider-Man is his own comic book, and he's the only superhero in that world for a long time. So when you want to reboot the character, you don't need to license all of the Marvel universe. You really only need to license one character.
Wait a minute. All the Marvel characters live in like the real world. So like most of them live in New York City. And there are all references to real places, whereas DC has places like Metropolis.
Or Gotham City.
So when you say that Spider-Man lives in his own world, that's not true, because he's surrounded by Doctor Strange and Fantastic Four and Hulk. All those people live in the real world, too.
The crossovers come later, though, is my point. Like, when you're telling the story of Spider-Man, he doesn't encounter another superhero for a long time. So if you're just planning on making one movie, or maybe even a trilogy, like, you don't have to, you maybe don't think ahead about the crossovers, you know what I mean? And they just keep rebooting the same Spider-Man over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Whereas with the Avengers and with X-Men, it seems like they have put in a greater amount of premeditation. So there's a Thor movie, an Iron Man movie, a Captain America movie, a Hulk movie, and then an Avengers movie. You know, and they did it more like the comic book did it, where they each have their own title, but then they do crossovers. And I just think Avengers has been much better executed than a lot of old comic book movies.
Well, I like the idea of creativity within constraints. Something that occurred to me while you were telling me about Birdman was that the constraints probably made it better. And that's something I've been noticing a lot in comedy and TV, television broadcast, because I know the FCC used to really heavily regulate what could be said and censor things on Saturday Night Live, for example, and other shows. And part of the comedy in those early episodes was watching the comedians and writers right up to the line of what was allowed and not cross it, but just get close enough to make people upset or make the regulators upset and make the audience laugh. I thought that was pretty cool. And that's where like a lot of the comedy came from. Like if they didn't have those constraints, just saying foul language or whatever would have been whatever they were trying to do or convey wouldn't have been as funny.
Yeah. I mean, it's really analogous to the notion of coercive law and voluntary law. Like when we talk about a stateless society or free society, we're not talking about a world without rules any more than when we talk about throwing away intellectual property, we're talking about a world without creativity, right? Like we can voluntarily opt into our constraints. Like a great example is comic books that choose to constrain themselves to black, white, and red.
Oh, right? That is cool.
They're not full color. And so that forces the artist to think creatively about the use of the only color in his palette, you know?
Yeah.
And things like Schindler's List are another great example. It's a black and white film, but there's this like one spot of it. I think it is red. There's the girl's jacket and I think a rose or something like that. And so because of that constraint, which is a voluntary constraint, something creative and something really, really impressive happens. But, you know, the creative mind works around the law, whether it's voluntary or involuntary. So, satire is very rich with people poking fun at the law.
Hey, there was another movie that you wanted to talk about. Also having
Cabin
to do with
in the
constraints?
Not constraints so much as deconstruction. I guess it's of constraints. But, Cabin in the Woods is really fantastic. I'm going to spoil it for everyone. So, it comes out...
How old is this movie, by the way? So, 10 years?
So, the main...
Because you're spoiling
the
movie...
The hero athlete... That's probably not 10 years. It's probably 5 years.
2002.
Okay, wow, really? So, 10 years, sure. That's 13 years. So, it starts out as you're... kind of cliche cabin in the woods. A bunch of college kids are going away for the weekend. They go out to a cabin. Like, it is playing on all the tropes that we've been taught by Evil Dead and by Wreck and by U-Turn and all these horror movies, right? But on top of that, the subtext is there's this corporation that is manipulating them by like pumping pheromones into the set or choosing the monster that they're going to fight, and like they're under surveillance all the time and they manipulate the temperature. And so this corporation is trying to orchestrate them into reenacting a play in a sense. Huh. And the corporation keeps getting this phone call from someone upstairs on this red phone who's happy or not happy with the performance and wants things to change. And you find out that what's going on is the corporation is trying to enact this old ritual to placate the elder gods. And that the elder gods need a human sacrifice, specifically 4, possibly 5 human sacrifices. And it's the athlete, the fool, the virgin, the whore, and the brain? I don't know what the 5th one is. It's your classic Scooby-Doo troop, right?
Yeah.
And they have to be killed in the right order, and the virgin can either live or die depending on her choices. And this is an ancient ritual that's designed to placate these ancient gods, and if you don't do the ritual right, they'll wake up. But the subtext, and what I'm going to spoil for you, is that the point of the movie is that the audience is the elder gods. So what this movie is about is that every year a horror movie has to come out that is full of these tropes, that is full of these cliches, that will hold the audience at bay for another year.
Whoa! So tell me this wasn't written by just one of those standard Hollywood writers who's just sick of the audience, knows exactly what to write for them to, make them dance to his tune.
I don't know who the writer is. I probably should.
It sounds like it's someone who's tired of writing in Hollywood.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, this is how Joss, he envisions the audience.
It's Joss Whedon. There you go. It's Joss Whedon, right? So he did Firefly, and he did Avengers or Captain America. Joss Whedon's a great writer for that matter. I mean, this is some really like heady deconstructive stuff, and it's underappreciated. And one of the reasons I think Cabin in the Woods is underappreciated is because you look at it and you're like, I've seen this movie before. Right?
Yeah.
Like you look at the cover and it's like, oh, another Cabin in the Woods movie. Like, I've seen a dozen Cabin in the Woods movies.
That's why I didn't see this. And it's 2012, by the way, which I misspoke earlier. But yeah, when I saw the trailer for this movie, I remember it coming out and people would be like, oh, Cabin in the Woods, and like scary scenes and blood and people walking around scared. I was like, yeah, I've seen this a million times. It's not any special kind of movie. I can't believe that they're doing something so obvious.
Right. And so he is while feeding that genre, he's making fun of that genre.
Wow.
And it's another one of these pulling the curtain aways, right? Like, he's showing you, using this corporation as a vehicle, he's showing you the writer's room of a horror movie and how predictable they know that they are. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I love that kind of stuff because for me that it's the same as the Freedom Fiends, right? It's a teaching hospital. The movie, while watching it, is teaching you how to write a horror movie. The same way that Birdman is kind of teaching you how to write a Hollywood drama, or Unbreakable is teaching you how to write a hero movie, or you know, like it's entertainment school.
That's just amazing. To me, I'm trying to think. Oh, you brought up Unbreakable, which is another deconstructive movie about heroes.
Mm-hmm.
We're deconstructing
it's a
Hollywood
movie that never had a comic book.
Deconstructing Hollywood's writers, putting them out onto the therapist table of the Freedom Fiends. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Worms. We're back, Freedom Fiends, and we're still deconstructing Hollywood. I want to get back to that, and because I think it's a brilliant topic. But first, there's something on my heart, ladies and gentlemen, that I feel I must share with you. If I'm going to be honest as I broadcast this evening, My heart weighs a little heavy because my boss is in jail. He is behind bars.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. This is a test of Furries, the Fiend's Unnecessary Random Reeducation Interruption Exigency System.
Oh, no. That sounds bad.
If this had been an actual unnecessary re-education interruption, you'd be told where to go in your area.
The Central Scrutinizer, are we safe?
You're safe. Yeah, I'm calling to let you know you're safe. And I am sick. I'm getting better on my antibiotics. I'm getting the zombies out of my throat. I just wanted to test. I put this little thing in the back of Fiend Phone so I could do this, but only to fiends. I can't interrupt other people. But, you know, I'm trying to phase myself out of the show, but I want to be able to come on the show like the government on my voluntary system here whenever I need to. So, you know, I'm checking it out. You guys are doing great. And there's another movie that kind of teaches you how to make a movie. It's that Nicolas Cage movie, Adaptation. It's a Spike Jonze film, actually.
Yeah.
That was on my list for sure.
It deconstructs the hero's journey. All right. Thanks, you guys. Doing a great job. Michael Dean, longtime listener, first time caller. Thanks for having me on. Take care, man.
Thanks, Michael.
Bye-bye.
So that's funny because I had this dream. I usually take a nap before doing the Fiends and recharge all my energy juices. And during the nap that I took before the show, I woke up to this nightmare feeling and Davi letting me know, like, Michael says we have to have the phone lines open for the first hour. He's, you know, like, I don't know why. Like, why? I was like, oh, I guess he's going to call in. But we don't even need to have phone lines open.
This is the dream? I didn't say that.
No, this was a total dream. Yeah, so you never said this, Davi. I'm aware of that. But I don't know if I predicted that Michael was going to jump into the show this first hour. Maybe that was part of his plan. Maybe that was spontaneous. I'm not sure. But
it's anyway, the zombie cool. Hive mind. Are you infected?
Maybe. I need to get my my injection. What is it? The thing that Nick doesn't have yet. He doesn't have a tag or something. I forget. Anyway, so my heart weighs heavy. I was just saying, before we were so rudely interrupted by the government man,
the Central Scrutinizer.
The Central Scrutinizer. That my friend, my boss, James Cleveland, is in jail because he, I guess it's a long story, but he didn't hurt anybody. That's the most important thing to get out there. And he was driving down to Georgia. First of all, he owns a thrift store. He started a business. He moved up to New Hampshire from Georgia. I moved up to New Hampshire from Philly. We both moved here as part of the Free State Project for more freedom in our lives. We want to be able to experience liberty in our lifetimes. And so him starting this business was the realization of a dream. It's a thrift store, so he resells property. He was going down to get some more merchandise from his family in Georgia, where they have some things that he could sell. And so he was going down in a box truck. And on his way down, he was stopped by the Dinwiddie County Sheriffs in Virginia. And they stopped his truck, told him that they wanted to...
Is Dinwiddie a county, or are you saying they're dimwitted? I might have misheard you.
Dinwiddie is a county. So I know it sounds like I'm saying they're dimwitted. That is, it's Dinwiddie, Dinwiddie.
So, just making sure.
Yeah, no, it's a real place.
Don't want to cast aspersions by mistake. I like to be intentional about my aspersions.
Well, so they stopped him, these sheriffs. They're like, we need to search your truck because your registration has recently expired. I don't know if it's weeks or a month or what, but he said his registration just expired. It's registered in Georgia, so it's not like it would be easy for him to just go do that from New Hampshire. So anyway, he was on his way down to Georgia. You would think there'd be no problems, right? But he says, when they say, we need to search your car, he says, no. I do not consent to a search. And that changes the dynamics of the rest of the evening. It set him on a path to jail. And I'll come back with the rest of that story for the other end of the worms. And then we'll deconstruct Hollywood some more. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Meow, meow.
Meow, meow.
Meow, meow.
Meow.
Meow, meow. Meow, 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 meow.
Yak with me.
Yak. Yak. Meow.
What sound does a yak make?
Yak. Meow.
I think it makes a
nyack, nyack, nyack
sound. Hey, this is the Freedom Fiends. I am Mr. Derek J. and broadcasting live from Pod Bay 2 Gay in Keene, New Hampshire. And I'm chatting with my friends Davi Barker of DaviBarker.com and Nick Hazelton of, what is your website again, Nick?
an-yak.com and-yak.com.
Worms. And we're talking about movies, deconstructing them, piglets, constructing them. And my friend who's in jail right now, which is a heroic activist by the name of James Robin Hood Cleveland. That's at least how he's known here in the Shire.
And anyone who watches Comedy Central.
Right, and anyone who watches him on Comedy Central. That's true. I forgot about that, Davi. Many people can see him in a recent episode of The Colbert Report. Before The Colbert Report went off the air, they showed an episode featuring James Cleveland for his activism in feeding parking meters in downtown Keene, New Hampshire. What a criminal. Anyway, the city of Keene has gone after him. He's been arrested for video recording in Keene. And now he has been arrested in Dinwiddie, Virginia, for the crime of possession of Schedule 4 narcotics. Some pills were in the box truck that he uses to transport merchandise. And the police did some kind of search on his truck and found these pills and decided that that violates the peace and dignity of the state of Virginia. And so they are a victim of my friend James's actions of driving through their town. And they're going to put him in a cage and set that right and restore the peace and dignity by punishing him. So they've charged him with this crime. He is right now in a jail cell. Awaiting bail from someone. He's not quite sure, his family or whatever. But what a nightmare to happen. And I don't want to talk about this too much. I don't want to focus on this. This show is sort of like the show that would exist in a stateless utopia. But the reality is, as I broadcast tonight, I'm thinking about James and him being in a jail cell out there alone. And, you know, my heart's out there with him. And I don't know. I had to pay some sort of tribute to that because it's courageous to flex your freedom to not consent to a search. And I feel like this was sort of a punishment by the police. Now, I can't say much more about it. Hopefully James will be able to clarify the situation, but presumably he's going to take this to court because those aren't his pills. And the state is going to have to prove that he knowingly violated their ordinance, which it can't reasonably be argued that he did. I mean, as a person who owns a thrift store, he's going to handle merchandise that is previously owned by other people, and they could put drugs in there, guns, cash, whatever, and he doesn't know what's going to be in some of those tubs of merchandise and can't really do as thorough a search as police with drug dogs. So anyway, that's my story.
It reminds me a little bit of that story about a month ago about the robot buying drugs online.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember this story?
Sweden, right?
Yeah, it was a bot or a robot of some kind that was designed essentially to go on the internet and buy something at random so that there was no human agency involved.
Yeah.
And then it bought something which was contraband, and so the question becomes, who do you charge? It's not knowingly, it's not intentionally. There may not even be a human being involved except the person who turned on the robot. But it's the same idea, right? It's that the person was not willfully engaging in a crime or whatever. It's not even an act of civil disobedience. It's like it would be like if you emptied out your medicine cabinet and dropped it off in a box at a Goodwill donation location, and then they charged the owner of that box truck or the driver of that box truck with possession of prescription narcotics.
Yeah, it would be exactly like that. And that's what this was. They're just prescription drugs that don't belong to James. So, I mean, woo-wee. What kind
Which
of crime
is
that?
Which is a silly crime anyway.
Yeah, I know there are kids who get charged with this, too, for bringing in Advil and Tylenol into school when they get headaches and stuff.
Yep, for me it was no-dose.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're not supposed to bring any sort of form of medication to school. I don't think you're even allowed to bring hand sanitizer.
What? Really? Is that a thing now?
I'm not joking.
Because it's a drug?
Teachers can't give out hand sanitizer because if it has the drug facts on the label, you're not allowed to have it.
What, because kids will drink it and get drunk, or what's the idea there?
I have no idea.
You can't.
It's a question of whether or not there are facts on the label. Doesn't everything have facts on the label now?
Just rip off the facts.
It's a special label that says drug facts.
Oh, okay. Because then that makes you a pharmacist, right? You're.
But what's a drug fact? I mean, there's allergy warnings on a lot of food. Is that the same thing?
I don't know.
I think it's
you're
because
not allowed to have certain lip balms either.
They probably argue that if you're dispensing something that is a drug, then that makes you a pharmacist, and you have to have a license from the government to dispense drugs. So even if you're just
pumping.
Did you
see my post about my cat's shampoo?
No. What?
Get this. This is believe me, this will tie in. So I got a flea shampoo for my cat, and I wash him maybe once a year or so. And,
once a year?
You're not supposed to really wash cats at all, but like if we start seeing any evidence of anything, we like to jump on it right away.
Is your cat an outdoor cat or an indoor cat?
He's an indoor cat.
Okay.
So I'm reading the directions on the bottle of this flea shampoo for my cat, and the first line of the directions is, "It is a violation of federal law to use this product in any manner inconsistent with the labeling." Now, that's federal law. The next line is, and this is bold, large typeface, "Shake well before using." Now, I didn't shake this before I shampooed my cat, which means I've committed a federal crime, right? Like, isn't that what that says? I'm also currently using the bottle as a paperweight, which is inconsistent with the labeling, so that might be a federal crime. I'm also using it as a joke on the air, which is not consistent with the labeling, so that might be a federal crime.
Oh, wow. Arrest this man. Davi, you're clearly a danger to the state of, where are you? California?
California.
And you're
insulting
the peace and dignity thereof. You are under arrest.
I just find labeling is a really funny thing. When labeling sort of becomes mandatory, it's like all the things that are cancer-causing agents in California, but nowhere else. Like, because California requires that certain things be labeled as potentially cancer-causing, but no other state requires this, and companies sell, you know, there's interstate commerce, so you get things that are sold in, like, Wyoming that say, this product contains things that may cause cancer in California. It's like, you mean it doesn't cause cancer in Wyoming? What does that mean?
Yeah, what does that mean?
It means there's a bunch of busybody regulations that nobody ever read about what things need to be labeled as potentially cancer-causing. And the thing is, the label is so pervasive that nobody's afraid of it anymore. Because it's on everything.
Oh, right. So it stopped serving its purpose. It's the label that cried wolf.
It is. It's the label that cried wolf. The state that cried wolf. Man, that sounds like a children's book right there.
Speaking of children's books, I was going to bring this up on air. I was a listener sent me a book from 1953 that they found in their own thrift store in Philadelphia. And the title is Your Friend, the Policeman.
Oh, no.
It's amazing how much has changed in these 60 years. because the policeman described in the children's book is very different from the policeman that I see out in the world. But I didn't want to make this a Gov talk show, at least not tonight. So I'm going to save that for Cop Black Radio on Wednesday. But that one's coming up. Okay. So if you're interested, be sure to tune
in. There's a zombie driver match too.
There's a what?
There's a zombie in Survivor Max. There's a zombie in Survivor Max 2 that Max nicknames Officer Friendly because he's in uniform.
Wow, he's still in uniform. That's cute. So what about?
Well, yeah, I mean you're wearing whatever you are when you get bit, right? So yeah,
zombies don't ever launder and change their clothes.
No, not usually.
I would want to. I wouldn't want to be walking around all smelly like that. Although I guess you lose your personality. Hey, Nick, I wanted to bring you back in here because you were sort of saying or hinting at me something about shul. The shul that you go to. Are you? What's going on there? Are you
like
homeschooled?
German Schule?
Yeah, Schule. Are you? Are you still in Schule?
Schuled.
You are not homeschooled.
Not yet. My plan is to be able to start self-educating, being homeschooled by the next school year. Over the summer, I'll have a deal with my parents that if I have a place to live with running water and heat, I am able to rise out of shul.
Oh, man, that sounds like a pretty low standard, dude. I would get a little more than
I know. It's
heat
great.
And running water. Before you move out.
Well, yeah, that's my plan. But I bought a camper trailer. Actually, I got it for free from one of the teachers at school. So I got that, and I had to fix it up. The floor's a little bit wet, so it's not quite hospitable. But I'm going to fix that up this summer, and then my dad wants me to make a plan to educate myself, start reading books, more books than I read now.
And so what's the idea? Are you going to live on your parents' property in this, like, shed?
Well, it's a trailer. It's a camper trailer. It's not a shed, but yeah.
Well, okay.
It's slightly nicer than a shed.
All right. And you're going to have a plan for self-education. I think this is revolutionary, because recently I wrote an email to my little sisters, who are 12, and that's much younger than you, but told them that they should drop out of school, basically. That school from here on out is not going to teach them anything that they can't learn themselves, and it's a waste of time. And you
well, what
are
about the receipt?
What? The receipt that they get?
What about their receipt? Don't they need a receipt?
Nope. They don't. And some people saw this as wildly irresponsible advice to be giving youngsters, but here you are sort of living that example. What do you think about that? Is it possible?
It's definitely possible. It's absolutely possible.
Well, what's your plan for self-education? Are you going to just do Khan Academy stuff or what?
Nah, I'm going to keep reading, keep doing the podcast. I learned quite a bit about a lot of things from listening to podcasts and doing my own.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Is your child defiant, independent, annoyingly inquisitive? After a long, hard day of following the rules, who wants to deal with troublesome kids? 49% of children suffer from oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD. Symptoms of ODD include independent thought, rampant creativity, and failure to submit to authority. But now there's a solution. The good people at Pilfer can help you with their time-release, once-daily capsule, Compliacin. Your child won't be able to form his own opinions, let alone express them. It maintains your child's ability to go to a state-run school and perform simple tasks around the house. You won't have to worry about parenting, and the school won't have to deal with your kid asking questions. Compliacin. You'll go from this.
Quit telling me what to do!
To this.
Good morning, Mother. I love going to school. And this week we're learning all about how the government is our federal family and they're here to help us.
Compliacin. Talk to your school psychiatrist and ask for it by name.
Reconvene. Dean, to bring you this message. Drop out of school. Is that irresponsible of me? Sorry. This does not apply to everyone, but only a select group of insomniacs.
It's no more irresponsible. It's no more irresponsible than stay in school.
Yeah.
Right? Like, giving somebody advice sight unseen without knowing anything about their circumstances or their aptitudes is irresponsible. Yeah, just like all those posters the government prints.
Yeah, and I like that we're chatting tonight with an anarcho-yakitalist, Nick Hazelton, who has started his own podcast, has raised his own yaks, has now birthed some pigs, and is adventuring...
Myself.
What?
Myself.
Yourself, yes. And you're now adventuring into
the... You said birth pigs, I said myself. Oh, but
yes.
No, I did not birth pigs. My pig birthed pigs.
Yeah, right. But you were there. You made it happen.
Yes. Yeah.
It couldn't have happened without you.
And, I'm responsible, yeah.
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 And now you're adventuring into the world of self-education, which I just think is... it's so needed. Like, and it's something that I can't do. It's something that someone who's your age has to be doing. I can't self-educate at this point. I mean, yeah, like, education is a lifelong process.
What do you mean? You're both self-educating all the time.
Well, I mean, like, as an alternative to regular schooling. Like, I'm not in that age zone anymore.
It's too late to go back and drop out of high school.
Right, exactly. But Nick is at least talking about doing that. I don't think you've done that yet, right, Nick?
No, and it's, I mean, I never like to make completely positive statements about the future, but I'm definitely trying.
Okay,
and it looks
that's
like
where
it's
going
to be a pretty easy possibility, yeah.
What do your teachers think about that? Do they know about your plan? Are they like, yeah, school's pointless, get out while you can, kid?
Well, I think they all know. Everybody knows what I'm trying to do at the school. Nothing that I do.
That Nick guy, he just wants to raise yaks and live in a shed.
Well, right. And I have conversations with teachers every once in a while. They know exactly what I'm doing because I do the show and they all are interested in what I'm doing. It's a very small school, so everybody just knows what anybody's doing. But I haven't had any of the teachers come out and say, Nick, don't do this. They've said that, well, I don't know if that's a brilliant idea, but I see where you're coming from. I don't appreciate you not doing your work in class, but I know what you're doing. So they get it. They get what I'm trying to do, and I think they all understand, but they're not approving of it openly even.
I hate that statement, like, I don't appreciate you doing your work. Your work? I didn't choose this. I never asked to be in your classroom. You just assigned me some work. That I never asked for. You know, how dare you expect it to be done? I am not your slave. I'm not going to just jump whenever you say so. Unless it's gym class. Do you have gym class?
Oh, yeah, that's my favorite class.
Really? That's the one I always played hooky in.
Oh, man.
It's easiest to play hooky.
I'm an active person, so.
Oh, okay. Davi, do you ever play hooky?
You know, I didn't. I somehow made it all the way out of high school with a perfect attendance record, not even
a
sick day. Which I, you know, at the time I wore like a badge of honor. And now looking back, I'm like, man, I must have missed out on so much stuff.
Yeah. We were having way more fun than you outside of school. I don't know. Maybe you were having a good time.
I mean, I had a lot of fun in school because opportunity to challenge, and it was like a kiddie pool for challenging authority, right? Like, I knew that the water was shallow and the consequences were small, and I could sort of mouth off and challenge them and ask them critical questions and things like that, but definitely not there voluntarily.
Well, I upset my little sisters when I suggested via email that they drop out of school. They didn't write back to me. One of them hasn't spoken to me since. And the other apparently, like, cried to my dad, and he had to write back to me being like, I don't think you realized how much you upset your sisters. So I guess this advice really isn't for everyone. I know.
That's so strange. What's the emotional content of that? What is she crying about?
Well, I would love to know, but she didn't really, she's not really communicating with me as much as I'd like. So I can only speculate. I think if I had to make my best guess, it's because she's hearing two conflicting messages from people she respects, me and my dad. So like my dad's like, school is valuable, you must do well, and it's important for your future. And I'm like, nah, it's not. Get out of there. Go live your life. It's never too early to start living and following your dreams instead of the dreams of others.
Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Meow, meow. Meow, meow.
Freedom from restriction and restriction, bringing you both because restriction.
Constriction?
Yes. Freedom from conscription would be nice. That's a weird thing. How, like, I never thought about this.
Conscription?
Yeah, conscription.
Yeah.
Like, I never thought about how often we are conscripted. Like, when people get jury duty, like, that's a conscription, which, you know, it never really
occurred to me. That's such a nice-sounding word for such a nasty thing to do to a person.
What, jury duty?
You know, conscription. It sounds so sophisticated, doesn't it?
Like here's your prescription.
Right, exactly.
It could heal you.
Yeah.
Like a medicine. It's the government medicine, conscription.
Oh, it's like that Congress progress thing. It's conscription, proscription.
Yeah. So what does that mean? If a proscription...
I don't know what that means.
It's something that somebody... I don't know. I can't figure it out. But it is weird that, you know, I just found this out recently because a friend of mine received a letter for jury duty. And he doesn't live where the letter came, so he didn't get it. And then the government's all like, hey, you didn't show up. Now we're mad at you. Here's another letter. And he didn't get that either. So it's like, okay, what are they going to do next? Like, what's, you know, do they send men with guns after him? Or does he just, he's not allowed in that town anymore? It's so weird.
What would probably happen is that they would put out a warrant for him and they would just wait for him to get picked up on some sort of like unregistered tags on his car sort of thing. And then when they run his tags, they say, oh, wait, we have all this other stuff to throw at you now that we have you here in person.
Hey, wait a minute, sir. Once upon a time, you were conscribed into jury service and you did not show up. It's just very funny to me that that could even be considered a crime. I guess it's a contempt of court or something, but whatever. This is not a government show. We don't need to talk about government. We're talking about alternatives, and that really excites me. The fact that Nick is one of these people who is willing to take the risk of being weird and different and living the life that he wants to live is inspiring.
Free-range, homegrown human like they used to make.
Yeah, I heard they were more literate then, too. And Nick says he does a lot of reading. Like, what's your curriculum like, Nick?
I actually don't do a lot of reading, and that's one of the things that I need to do for a better education. That's why my dad wants me to make a plan, so because I need to read more, and I realize that.
Why?
So that's going to be my self-education plan.
Well, reading, what?
Well, I'm for think reading. That I should read more.
Yeah, but not just because like reading it's good, but like what's your reasons?
Oh well, gathering information. There's not a lot of great online sources for some of the things that I'm interested in. Like there's nothing in depth on yaks, and they think that there's a book out there, and I'm trying to find it, but I'm not sure. There might not even be a book, But being like the master yak dairyman, if I can find something to read on dairies and other animals, then I think that'll help me become better at milking and taking care of yaks. Because of right now, I'm just running off personal experience from the last year that I've had them, and for whatever I can pick up from the other 8 yak farmers in the area.
Yeah, that's a slow way to learn. If you're
maybe you'll write the book on yak milking.
Right, and I just might. I'll have to, because nobody else has one.
The Free and Independent Guide to Yaksmithing. What is it? What is it even called? Yak
herding.
Yak herding. Okay, makes sense. Yeah. And okay, so is that your passion? Is that going to be your focus? Is your yak farm?
Yeah, it's
and podcasting too, right?
Right. I'm really into philosophy. I'm really into politics. I've always been into it, and that's why I have the podcast. But I also really like the idea of sustainable agriculture, and I just love working with animals. So yaks is one of the best things I can do. I think that it's easier to monetize than the podcast. So that's my career choice.
Right. You were just on another successful podcast, the School Sucks podcast. And you were talking a little bit about your philosophy there.
Well, actually, I had Brett on. He reposted the interview, and we talked about, first we talked about education, his views on education on my show, and then we also talked about philosophy, yeah.
Oh, that's right. I stand corrected. Forgive me, Nick. You had Brett on your show. Brett from the School Sucks podcast was on the Anarcho-Yakalist podcast, and not the other way around, and then he just rebroadcast what you recorded. Is that right?
Yeah.
Cool.
That's right.
Man, you are paving the way.
Yeah, I'd like to think that I'm doing pretty well. I'm slowly making it. I've got 30 listeners, and I'm fine with that. But it takes time.
How do you know your listenership?
More than I have at your age.
Yeah.
I don't. I'm just guessing.
You're just guessing?
I made up a number. I think it's more than 30. I've got 62. I've got 62 Facebook likes now.
Okay.
I just made it past 60 this week.
So if half of them listen, then you've got about 30. We could round it up. Well, that's awesome, and I'm inspired. I'm wondering about how you develop a curriculum, because I did just make this suggestion to my younger sisters about, like, oh, drop out of school, that'll be great. But then I didn't offer something in its place. Like, it would be great if I was like, drop out of school and then take the, Ron Paul home study course or whatever. But like, I don't want to suggest that. I not that I have anything against on Ron Paul or whatever, but I don't think that there exists a study curriculum for unschooling. Am I wrong?
I would say that if there is, there shouldn't be. I mean, everybody's situation is different.
Yeah.
Right? I don't feel like you can say, do this when you drop out of school. You kind of have to know what that person is interested in doing and what they would like to do outside of school, and then they need to make their own plan with some help if they need it. But unschooling, I guess the way I get it from self-directed learning is it's self-directed.
See, but like, you have the benefit of having supportive parents who are like all for this, right?
Well, no, they're not all for it. They're willing, because I'm stubborn enough that I think I would have gotten my way either way. I either fail or drop out of school.
Oh, I see. Yeah, so they're going to be stuck with you. They can't kick you off the property, right?
Right. I think that CPS would not be
that. Well, that's unfortunate. I don't mean to laugh, but, they would probably keep you on their property anyway, even if they weren't very happy with your school performance. But yeah, so I guess what I'm asking is, do I have to take on the responsibility, since I'm making this recommendation against my parents' will, that my younger siblings drop out of school? Then they'll be left at home, right? And they're old enough to be left by themselves, but I feel like, do I have some responsibility here to them and to my parents to develop a curriculum for them? Give them something to do if they're not in school?
I don't know. I don't think you should make the curriculum. I think that you should have suggestions, like you said your sister's into drawing, suggesting some ways to get into that, I guess. I don't know anything.
She wants to do animation. She wants to do a webcomic, which I think would be awesome. Like, if she developed a successful webcomic at age 12, think of where she could work at 16 or, you know, whenever she gets to be your age. You know, I think that's the direction to take. If she's just some random kid thrown through the mill of regular schooling, she's not going to stand out in any sort of way at a young age. And I think that gives you an advantage. So, yeah, I do feel some responsibility there.
Well, yeah, and I mean, that's the main thing why I want to get out of school, is because it sets me apart. Well, I mean, I guess maybe it's not the main thing. The main thing is that I just don't like school. But, I mean, that's what I've done, right? I don't want to brag, but, you know, I've done well at setting myself apart from my peers. And
what does
you really
that mean?
Have to do that.
Academically? Or just, like, culturally, because you grow yaks and pigs?
Yeah, in general, I guess I'm just a unique person. I don't think you can stereotype me.
I'm different.
Me.
Right. Gosh darn it, people like me.
Right. So I think that there's a really good marketing strategy with that. And I think that if you set yourself apart, people remember you. And, you know, they hear, oh, that yak farmer kid, didn't he drop out of school? Well, that's unique. I mean, they're not going to care if you finish high school. Nobody cares if you actually finish high school. They're not going to recognize you for that. If you drop out and you make it, then people are going to know you.
Worms. Hey, I'm starting to think, is your yak thing, is that part of you just trying to be different and weird?
I got into yaks, yeah.
You're not, like, going for cows because everyone does cows?
Right, yeah. It's a niche market.
That's really a strong instinct. I mean, like, if you need to start from scratch, finding a niche where the market is not fulfilling a potentially lost demand is what you're looking for. Looking for unsatisfied demand is the thing to do if you're starting out.
Absolutely.
Because otherwise you're competing with Harris Ranch. You know, like, it's a different thing. I mean, so I'm not an employer, but I have had opportunities to hire people, like, temporarily to work at conferences and things. And when one of these, like, young, like, liberty or anarchy raised kids comes to me, and they are self-made people that are either homeschooled or entrepreneurial, like, that stands out to me. So I could totally see it being, like, part of that, like, multi-generational project people are always talking about, is at some point there's going to be a generation of entrepreneurial minded people who are successful enough to be creating jobs, who are going to be specifically looking for people who have sort of bucked the system. And I mean, I don't know that I'm that person, because I can't afford to hire people right now, but I mean, that would stand out to me as an employer.
So one day Shiny Badges is going to employ the dropouts of America.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. I'd love to be a size where I could do something like that. Right now I don't think that I am. But as soon as I am, those people definitely are going to get preferential hiring practices.
Brett from the School Sucks podcast recommended that I call it rising up rather than dropping out. And I agree with him that language really makes a difference. And when
That's a good point. What does dropping out even mean?
I don't know.
You're not dropping anything.
No, you're certainly not.
You're out of something. You're getting out of prison. But I don't know what drop means.
I think it's rising up. It gives it a way more positive connotation and helps inspire the imagination.
I like taking the ball.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Worms, 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 worms. Meow!
redemption in the third act. Welcome, fellas. We have made it. And we are calming the hamster in your brain this evening. I hope you have been able to relax throughout this adventurous journey. We've taken you many places, beginning with Hollywood. Hollywood looking in upon the lens of itself. And then baby pigs, an anarcho-yakalist, a man in jail for narcotics he wasn't aware of, marching down the road. And then we bring it all back. We're going to tie it up with a bow real nice here for you. I don't know how, but somehow we're going to bring all of these subjects together. Yes?
Something occurred to me that there might actually be some urgency in giving people the advice to drop out of school. Because when they're young, there's... I mean, I'm not an expert. I mean, I guess this would be something, this would be a theory to ask someone like Stephanie Murphy with. So she's a neurobiologist. But you have like neuroplasticity when you're young. Your brain is actually capable of absorbing and internalizing and synthesizing more information. And it sort of slows down and gets sort of crotchety as you get old, right? So it could very well be that a person is squandering their educational years in the education system. And it's going to actually be more work for them to learn new things later.
Boy, that is such a great argument.
New things now.
Wow. I absolutely agree with that. I feel like already I can tell that my brain worked a little bit better when I was 12 than it does today. And that I could absorb things like language things or skills. So, yeah, this message of, hey, maybe you don't have to be in school is so important for younger people to hear. Because where else are they going to hear it, if not from you?
It's almost like don't squander your youth not learning. Go learn, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think that
it's
is the danger.
Argument. I don't have evidence for it yet, but I have a strong... It fits all of my other hypotheses, so I have a strong suspicion that might be the case.
Well, I think also putting it that way helps people like my dad understand, because my dad sort of freaked out about this advice that I gave my younger sisters, being like, well, that's irresponsible, and they shouldn't hear that, and they're too young, and whatever. But it's like, no, if we find common ground, and I express... in a way that my dad can understand that, look, I value education. We all, that's what we want. We, for my little sisters, we all want them to be educated, right? So, you know, if that's the goal and I frame it that way, then, yeah, don't squander your young life not learning anything, as you put it. Go learn. That's what I want.
It's your impressionable years, right? It's the phases of imprint vulnerability, right? Like the first year, you're very susceptible to like emotional imprints. Your first 7 years, you're very susceptible to like imprints on authority. Like this is sort of basic Jungian psychology, right? But yeah, there are these phases of imprint vulnerability in the development of a human being, and youth is when these things need to be learned. Like, it would be very difficult if you just bought me a tablet and said, hey, learn how to animate. It'd be very difficult for me, but probably very easy for her. So there's a value, there's a scarcity in the years of youth when you should be picking up these things. And you should perhaps be more passionate about these things when you have the ability to pursue them fully.
And failing is an easier time when you're young, too, because presumably these 12-year-olds and Nick at 16 are living with their parents. So imagine, you know, you go out and live your dream, you try your best, and you fail, as sometimes happens. You've still got a soft landing pad if you're living with your folks. Like, you don't have to worry about all the overhead.
Try something new.
Yeah. Then, yeah, tons of years ahead of you. Well, I hope we've calmed the hamster in your brain tonight and inspired you to rise up or take the ball, as Davi puts it.
I like take the ball instead of rise up. Like, no, this I don't like this game. I am taking the ball and going home.
And I'll never watch another Hollywood horror movie the same way again. So thank you for breaking it down, Davi.
Yeah, for sure.
And pigs will never taste the same after hearing about their birth from the anarcho-yakitalist. Well, what's your website one more time, Anyak?
an-yak.com.
We also got Davi Barker at davibarker.com, and I'm at thederekj.com, and you've been listening to The Freedom Fiends, freedomfiends.com.